Broadcast Studios. This is ABQ Connect with Jim Williams.
Welcome into ABQ Connect today. I'm glad to have a great Monday with the beautiful weather outside. A little sprinkle of rain last night. Hope everybody had a nice weekend. Jim Williams in studio with our good friend and frequent contributor, Steve McKee. Steve is the owner of McKee Wallwork Advertising in town. He's a dad. He's an author of a couple of amazing books. He wrote When Growth Stalls, How It Happens, Why You're Stuck, and What to Do About It. Maybe you could turn that into a dating book too, Steve. Just kidding. And Power Branding, Leveraging the Success of the World's Best Brands. Steve, you've been working with McKee Wallwork now for how long?
23 years.
You know what's really neat is Pat Wallwork and you have been partners the whole time.
She has been, they say partnerships don't work.
Yeah.
Ours worked because of her.
Yeah.
She's a wonderful lady.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Well, you have all kinds of creative things that you have a team that you've built. You have people that you're bringing up and they're doing more and more all the time. So among the things that you've done also is you are frequently published or quoted. You have a list on your website, the New York Times, USA Today, Advertising Age, Ad Week, Investors Business Daily, the Los Angeles Times. Now, I could name about 40 others, but there's one I don't see on the list here.
Yes.
ABQ Connect.
You know, we have to update the website.
I'm just teasing you. You know I am. I just thought you'd get a kick out of that. Hey, Steve, you are a native New Mexican, and you've been working in politics just on the side, observing. You're a brand guy. You even went to the state of New Mexico and said, look, this is how we can improve our brand.
Yeah.
And you love politics, and you're interested in it, and
yeah.
You vote, and you encourage all of us to do the same thing. You encourage us to think and have given us resources on where we can go to find out what's going on in politics. So now all of us have seen the platform of the Democratic Party, and we've seen a capitalist in Joe Biden. Looks like he's kind of come to the top of the party, and you have our friend Bernie Sanders, who really is espousing Democratic socialism.
Yeah, that's branding.
That's branding. So we're talking about socialism. We're talking about capitalism today and how they differ. So I think it's going to be a neat topic for everybody.
And a timely one because here we are in the primary. And yes, Joe Biden's a capitalist. I might call him a soft capitalist. but it is true that the battle is sort of being waged on that side of the aisle for the nomination. And then in the general election, you know, you've got a hardcore capitalist in the president,
mm-hmm.
and then either a softer one or a socialist / communist in Bernie Sanders. It's almost scary to say that word, like it's accusatory, but it might be fair. It might be fair.
Well, talk to us a little bit about the definitions of those terms, a capitalist versus socialist.
That's where people get really confused. And I think it's partly because the other side, and when I say the other side, normally I'm very non-side choosing, but I'm definitely on a side here. I'm a capitalist, right? Mm. And I hope to make the case today that we need to be. Normally, the other side tries to confuse things because there's an expression called getting the camel's nose under the tent, which is once the camel's nose is under the tent, the tent's going to get turned over.
Mm.
And so democratic socialism, communism. Basically, the definitions are these. In socialism, the government owns the means of production, either of one industry or multiple industries. They basically own the factories, the industry. In communism, that's true, but then there's also really no such thing as private property.
Mm.
In a pure communist system, there's no private property on the industrial side or the personal side. Whereas in a capitalist system, free market, private property, property rights, free exchange, supply and demand, those sorts of things. And so really the difference between the systems is who controls the resources of a society? Is it the people or is it the power?
Mm. Steve, why do so many people that have been successful financially feel like they need to apologize for having been financially successful?
You know, your guess is as good as mine. I think there's a couple of things to it. One is, in a lot of cases, I mean, we're all subject to selfishness and greed, right? Those mm-hmm. are as mm-hmm. part of the human condition.
Mm-hmm.
And in a lot of cases, people have gotten rich, perhaps with the wrong motives or maybe with some compromises. And so there should be a sense of guilt there. In other cases, if the money comes too easily, and when I say too easily, if too much money comes too quickly, and again, I don't want to disparage him, but if you look at like professional athletes or actors, right, they make a lot of money and they work really hard, but they make a lot of money. They don't work any harder than you or I do.
Mm-hmm.
They make a lot more money. And I think there's a sense of somehow you know that you've been compensated unjustly and you feel guilty about it. But then there's probably a healthy aspect of it, which is even you and I are in the richest 1% of all the people who have ever lived.
Mm.
And properly understood, I wouldn't think the Lord would want us to feel guilty, but I do think he'd want us to be aware of what we've been given and act accordingly.
And when you say act accordingly, I mean, we're obviously responsible for giving back to the Lord.
Yeah.
And tithing and giving and helping and doing charity. Those kind of things. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's that really kind of gets to the differences between the systems. It's charity versus compulsion.
The first time I noticed this in politics was back when Mitt Romney was running for president. And I remember everybody was after his taxes. You know, news media was after his taxes. And finally it came out and they revealed his taxes. And I don't want to say this is exactly right because it was some years ago, but I believe that he gave close to $17 million to charity.
Yeah.
And I thought, why wouldn't you have, I know you don't want to stand on the street corner and say, I gave. Biblically, you know, we don't want to say, hey, I gave alms at the temple and we're not broadcasting. That's between us and God. But in that instance, it was pretty clear that he was a very generous human being.
Yeah. I think in that instance, one of the reasons you don't want your taxes released is you never know what they're going to try and find or accuse you of.
Right.
So it's not a simple matter of you can see that I gave plenty of money away. Anytime you release information like that, the opposition, whoever the opposition is going to comb over it, looking for things to accuse you on. And there is a sensitivity to being wealthy. I mean, Mitt Romney was a very successful businessman.
Mm.
By all accounts, ethically.
Mm-hmm.
No, not by all accounts. It appears very ethically.
Mm-hmm.
But some coroners accused him of doing some bad things. And, of course, that's the nature of our politics.
Yeah, anytime there's success, there's always some criticism that goes along with it. And, you know, we're not here to endorse any particular business or philosophy, but we're talking about the foundations of our country were built on free market.
The reason that we are the wealthiest country that has ever lived, the reason that the world has been pulled out of poverty over the last 150 years is because of capitalism, which has gotten a bad rap. But if you want to call it free enterprise, free market system, those are all acceptable synonyms. That's why we are. That's why you and I are talking on the radio instead of working in a mine right now.
Yeah. Next November, we're going to have an election that's going to include all 112 of our state representatives, senators, and legislators. It's also going to include a federal election for president of the United States. And right now, we have three candidates. Two are capitalists. One's a socialist. That's why we're talking about socialism versus capitalism today.
There is a fourth, Tulsi Gabbard. I just have to give her props because she hasn't dropped out.
Yeah. Well, she's not showing up really on the radar.
She's not.
But, you know, she's brave and courageous and I always admire people that put themselves out there. So, yeah, kudos to you for remembering that. We'll be back with more with Steve McKee. Stay with us on ABQ Connect.
Whether at home or in the workplace, we're all leaders. Become a better leader in this leadership moment with Craig Groeschel.
I'll call it mental or creative energy. Now, in my line of work, this tank is the most difficult to keep filled. I'll just tell you a little bit about what I do. On top of leading our church that has about 750 employees in 33 different locations, on top of all that, I'll write about 60 different talks, meaning a sermon or a leadership talk a year. That's more than one a week. So I have to really keep this tank full. For me, I do this by doing two things, by taking in and by giving out. Taking in and giving out, let me explain. Taking in is being in any kind of environment that helps me intellectually or stimulates my creativity. For me, as an extrovert, it generally happens when I'm around people.
That was Craig Groeschel on a KNKT Leadership Moment. Hear more at life.church/leadership podcast.
Here's Mike Fabares, Bible teacher on Focal Point.
You know, when God called Moses to lead Israel's exodus from Egypt, his response was less than enthusiastic. If you'll remember, Moses attempted to resist God's call by reminding God of all the resources he didn't possess. I don't have the reputation. I don't have the credibility. I can't speak eloquently enough. But God wanted Moses to take inventory with a different perspective. It wasn't about what Moses didn't have. It was about God's ability to use what Moses did have. And when we step up to the task, even a simple shepherd's stick becomes the staff of God. So stop trying to remind God of what you don't have. Trust Him today to take what you do have to fulfill His calling on your life.
Right thinking leads to right living. Want more? Power up with Pastor Mike Fabares on Focal Point, a half hour of hard-hitting Bible teaching here on your station. Or check it out online at focalpointradio.org.
You're listening to KNKT. Welcome back to ABQ Connect with Jim Williams.
Steve McKee is in studio with us today. He has been kind of a regular political commentator for us for a year or so. Steve, appreciate your contributions here. I want to mention one other thing that you used to do. You and Denise used to teach some premarital counseling stuff here at the church. And I want to mention to everybody that today is actually the last day you can register for the Marriage Enrichment Workshop. It's $95 per couple. It's going to be Friday, 6:30 to 9:30 p.m., Saturday, 8:30 to 3:30 p.m., and it's the last day to sign up is today. It's going to be March 20th and 21st. As part of your $95, what happens is you get to take an assessment, both the husband and wife. That assessment then is then provided to you at the enrichment thing, and you have a chance to really go in depth about a lot of things. So if you're ready to encourage your marriage and strengthen your marriage, regardless if it's already strong or not, it can always be stronger. Or if you're struggling, this could be a special time for you. So go into the Calvary ABQ website and sign up for the Marriage Enrichment Workshop, March 20th through 21st. Steve, how long have you and Denise been married now?
33 years.
I think that just must have been because you had a really terrific singles ministry leader back
in the
day.
Back in the day, we did. I don't remember his name.
Well, hey, Denise is very generous to share you with us, and I know you're working all the time. And this is a really intriguing subject because we don't know what's going to happen with the candidates. Donald Trump obviously will, I guess, be the Republican nominee. But on the Democratic side, you've got three people still active, and Bernie and Joe Biden are at the top. And I don't mean to say Bernie disrespectfully, but he scares me.
That's what people call him, yeah.
He scares me. Well, I almost don't want to call him that. I almost want to call him Mr. Sanders, but it sounds like he sells chicken, so I'm not sure that's a good thing. What do you think about what is the risk that we have in electing a socialist to become the president of the United States?
You might be surprised at my answer. In the short term, less so, because we have such wonderful institutions and checks and balances. And as long as the Congress isn't crazy, a lot of the things he's espousing on the campaign trail would not get enacted into law. Having said that, we know that the power of the presidency has grown immensely over the past 50 years, and he could do a lot with executive orders. I think my bigger concern is the bully pulpit that it gives him, and the legitimacy that it provides a viewpoint that has been clearly shown as illegitimate over the past 50 years.
Why the renewed interest in socialism?
You know, we're all scratching our heads, those of us of a certain age, aren't we? And I think it's a couple of reasons. Do you know that the Berlin Wall fell in 1990, 30 years ago. Yeah. I mean, to us, it was a blink of an eye.
Sure.
But if you're under the age of 30, or arguably under the age of 40, you're not being taught it in school. You're not being taught history in school. And also, you know, we who are boomers grew up thinking we were going to have to crawl under our desks in the middle of the school day because the bomb was coming. You remember the fear we had growing up? We just lived with that. And there was this other. There was the American way, Western civilization, and then there was this Soviet Eastern Bloc communism. And it was sort of in the water. All around us all the time. It was us versus them. It was right versus wrong. It was capitalism versus communism. And we just kind of took it for granted that we were the good guys and they're the bad guys. Of course, history has borne that out. But today, we're not living in that environment. Kids aren't being taught it in school. And here's a presidential candidate who is leveraging his appeal off of, you know, real issues that we have in the economy and suggesting things that sound great. I mean, who wouldn't want free college?
But how can a person say it's those million ears out there that are getting all the benefits. Is Bernie Sanders not a millionaire, not a multiple homeowner?
He is. He's changed, though. He used to say it's the millionaires. Now he says it's the billionaires.
Oh, it's the billionaires.
Because he's a millionaire with three homes. I only have one home.
Yeah.
A lot of people don't have a home.
And again, who should apologize if they have three homes?
Right. He made his money. Well, I mean, he wrote a book and made a lot of money because he was on the government dole for the last 50 years. Mm-hmm. But good for him,
yeah,
right? And
yeah,
that's kind of the attitude is he has a platform and good for him. But I do fear that he's legitimizing something that we know is illegitimate and our younger generation doesn't have the tools or the context with which to evaluate that.
You know, this is probably a poor analogy, but I look at Dallas Cowboys quarterback Dak Prescott. And a guy got paid pretty good money last year, but he did so probably making half, maybe 60% of what he should have been paid based on NFL standards, still hasn't got a contract, and America's really rooting for the guy to get a crazy contract.
He's going to be okay.
And Jerry, and you know, Jerry Jones, who is quite a business person, obviously owns what I understand to be the most valuable sports franchise in the world in the Dallas Cowboys. And I'm, by the way, not a Dallas Cowboys fan. I'll just point that out. But my Raiders have just been failing me, so I'm hoping that they get a little better. But right now, I use this as an analogy because we're all rooting for a guy like Dak Prescott to knock a home run and get a great contract and lead his team to Super Bowls and all of that. But so many business people are very successful. You know, even like a guy like Michael Bloomberg. I mean, what a business that guy's.
Yeah, and it's funny because when we see actors and athletes making those contracts, we sort of don't have a problem with it.
Yeah.
But if CEO is highly paid, somehow we do.
Yeah.
I don't know that that's fair. Michael Bloomberg, give him credit. He invented something at a moment in time. I've read his biography. We've done some work with the company. And I'm not a fan of Michael Bloomberg, but I give him his props.
Yeah.
He met a market need right at the proper time, and he has, it's just amazing what his company has done.
Yeah. Well, absolutely. Tell me about democratic socialism and how adding that modifier affects.
Yeah. See, and we were joking earlier, that really is, it's branding. I mean, you could argue that, Bernie would argue that the, you know, so the Norwegian countries, Norway and Scandinavian countries, Norway and Sweden, are democratic socialist countries, and there's a lot of argument about that. They're really not. They're capitalist countries with a big welfare state. Mm. But he would say democratic socialist. What it is that adjective in front of the word socialist softens it for people, and it makes it more appealing. Essentially, under socialism, it is a system of coercion. Democratic socialism simply means that we elect the people to coerce us. And you've heard the expression, one vote, one person, one time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's what happened, you know, in Venezuela. That's what happened. Adolf Hitler, people don't realize it, but not the Nazi Party was the National Socialist Party. He was duly elected. People don't realize that. I'm not comparing Bernie Sanders to Adolf Hitler. Mm-hmm. But what I am suggesting is that by calling it something, this is what we do in our politics these days. We name things that aren't fair. Calling it democratic socialism is just his way of softening it. That it feels somehow Western as opposed to, you know, Eastern communism and socialism. I wouldn't believe it for a minute. If you think about it this way, nobody likes monopolies, right? Everybody says monopolies are bad.
Mm-hmm.
Well, why would you create a monopoly and give it to the people who have all the guns, the government,
right?
We don't like corporate monopolies, but a government monopoly is just that much worse, and that's what you get under socialism.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's really scary. And then there's big corporations like Microsoft. But if you want to criticize their primary stockholder, Bill Gates, I mean, Bill Gates has been very generous.
Well, beyond that, I would say beyond that, Bill Gates has done more to improve the condition of the world than all of the members of the United Nations put together. Steve Jobs is another case in point. Not a great character guy. Okay. If you've read his biography, you know anything about him. Not a great character guy. I'm not endorsing his character. He famously, though, Apple famously never gave a nickel to charity in Jobs's day. And they were criticized for that. He was maniacally focused on the success of the company. I would submit that what Steve Jobs did has done more to alleviate poverty than any amount of money he could have given to charity. Because the things that he invented, not the least of which is the smartphone, mobile banking, mobile healthcare. Africa is now connected not via wired technology. It skipped that part and went straight to wireless. So you could argue that Steve Jobs is one of the greatest philanthropists of the 20th century without ever having given away a nickel.
Yeah. How do we look at this from a Christian worldview, Steve?
I think it's all over the place. I mean, I think we swim in it. I think we biblically, private property in the Bible is assumed. It's everywhere. I mean, God gave Israel the promised land and the families and the year of Jubilee. It refers to private property. It exists among private property.
Even tells us how to take care of private property.
And the whole concept of stewardship and the whole concept of charity. There can be no charity without ownership. Mm-hmm. Think about that for a minute. You can't give something away if you don't own it. And so it presumes private property. And I keep coming back to that because private property really is a cornerstone difference between the two systems. In one case, socialism, they own the means of production. In communism, they own everything. And I think it's important for us to kind of bring this out. When you talk about private property, people sort of think land, property. No. Yes, it includes land. If somebody's listening to us in the car, that car you're driving is your property. You and the banks. Mm-hmm. The wallet in your pocket or purse holds money that is your property. Mm-hmm. The paycheck that your earnings are your property. And so when we talk about property, we're not talking about like big landowners. And so few of us are one of them. We're talking about any assets that you own, including liquid assets. That under a communist system, the government takes claim of those things. That's what's so terrifying about this. The paycheck that you earn by working a double shift this week is your money. It's yours to decide what to do with that. That's what we believe in a capitalist system. In a communist system, they don't.
So how does the Constitution stand up if you have a socialist president?
Well, the Constitution outranks the president. I mean, right? It's a conflict waiting to happen, clearly, because it's a socialist president would be recommending things that are clearly unconstitutional. And that's why there's some encouragement that even if Bernie Sanders were to win the presidency, it wouldn't be the end of days, because the Congress and the Supreme Court, the judiciary system would moderate him. But if it provides credibility for a flawed concept that we keep reelecting, it's problematic.
We've got a lot more to talk to Steve about this afternoon. Stay with us on ABQ Connect. We'll have more right after these messages.
This is a fresh thought. Listen up to Levi Lusco.
The enemy would have you think it has to be one or the other. Either you're shaken or you're stirred up for God. But I want to present to you a different picture, a different reality of what it authentically looks like to follow God and to do His will. John Wayne said that courage isn't the absence of fear. It's feeling afraid, but saddling up your horse anyway. And I think that's a realistic picture. At least I can tell you that from the 13 years of Fresh Life and watching God move in our ministry as we have, there has hardly been a moment that we have watched God move in power, that there hasn't been fear or doubt or pain or grief. I'm telling you, fear is not the opposite of faith. It's the occasion for faith. Smack dab in the middle of your fear is an opportunity for you to have faith. I would actually take it even stronger and say that without fear, how can there even be the presence of faith?
For more fresh thoughts, go to levilusco.com.
Hi, I'm John Erickson Tata. And listen to Psalm 16. It says, God, you make known to me the path of life. In your presence there is fullness of joy. At your right hand are pleasures forevermore. Now, I love this verse because it clearly says the Christian life is a path. It's a path of life. Now, I never realized that before the diving accident in which I became paralyzed. But I quickly learned, though, that the path of life has a name. It is the road that leads to Mount Calvary. My wheelchair has taught me that it is the same rocky, bloodstained path that Jesus walked when he carried his cross. But that hard, difficult path is still the path of life, abundant life, happy life. For as the verse explains, God's presence is on that painful path, and his presence always means fullness of joy and pleasures forevermore. That's good news for you today, should you find your path a painful one.
On
KNKT, this is ABQ Connect with Jim Williams.
Presidential election coming up this November. Of course, we're watching all the primary or pre-primary stuff going on in the Democratic Party. Donald Trump will already be the Republican nominee. So we're seeing Joe Biden, Bernie Sanders battling it out. And then we still have some other people. Are there two others or just one other now?
There's probably like nine, but there's one that's on the radar, Tulsi Gabbard, and they're trying to keep her off. Yeah. She's kind of hard to pin down.
Well, and she's well-spoken.
Very well-spoken.
It seems like she's got a lot of energy, but like most people, I kept hearing things from Democratic candidates about the so-called plans that they had. And then I thought about some of the bills that I saw going through the New Mexico legislature, and I see these things that people are considering to pass as law, but there's no plan. In other words, okay, so you pass this bill, what's the plan? What are you going to actually do with the money? And I'm just baffled that we don't have some requirements, Steve, before things are considered. Doesn't the whole thing have to have been put together?
Yes, that's the problem with what they call the administrative state, is the way the Constitution is set up is Congress is supposed to articulate down to the regulation, whatever it is. But what they've done is they've passed all these laws with intentions, and then they leave it to the regulatory state or the administrative state, unelected bureaucrats, to come up with the rules and the regulations. And that's entirely unconstitutional. But that's where we are in America.
And we end up wasting a lot of money.
Yeah, and worse, creating a lot of problems that you have no – you go to an unelected bureaucratic regulator, you have no recourse. They can just tell you to – too bad.
How often have we allocated money for a certain project with no plan? The plan then gets put together, and they need about 30% to 40% more money.
That's the norm, I think. That's the way that
– I mean, we saw that happen with our – famous transportation system here in Albuquerque.
Yeah, and here we are back to the core question, that one of the differences between a socialist or communist, you know, system where you empower the government and a capitalist system is when somebody fails under capitalism, there's accountability. Mm. When somebody fails in the government, there really isn't. You can't. There's no recourse. Now, if they do something criminal, yes. But if their plans fail, in business you go bankrupt. Right. You lose your house. Mm-hmm. You lose your reputation. In government, you get promoted to another department. And this is not casting aspersions at the people who work in government. They're you and I. You know, we're all the same. It's the system. It's the system of incentives. Government should only do what only government can do. I say that all the time. Government should only do what only government can do because the system has the wrong incentives for good behavior.
So I remember before the Affordable Care Act, before Barack Obama, not everybody had health care insurance, and the premiums that
still don't.
Yeah. And I was paying roughly $800 a month for a family of seven. To have that same insurance now, the premiums would be $2,200 a month. So the Affordable Care Act became very
branding.
Unaffordable.
Branding.
And I guess I'm asking, it's not a bad thing to want to have health care for everybody.
That's correct.
I mean, it's a nice, warm, fuzzy feeling, practical thing to want to have, but how you pay for it and all of those things. So when you see a socialist talking about everybody having health care, they mean something different than what a capitalist thinks, right?
Right. So first things first, everybody has health care. Anybody listening to our voices, you show up at the emergency room, they're going to get you in. You have health care. Many people don't have health insurance or quality health insurance. So that's what we're talking about. That's the first thing. And that's important because they paint the picture like we're letting people die in the street, and we're just not. Our culture, we have a social compact that just doesn't do that. But when a Bernie Sanders say that you have the right to health care, and I've even heard our governor say that, you can't invent a natural right. We have the right to free speech and the right to bear arms. The one thing about our rights that is true universally is that they don't cost anything. Because if your right costs something and you can't afford it, then I'm forced to give that to you and that infringes upon my rights. So it's a simple matter of logic that natural rights cannot cost anything. Therefore, healthcare cannot be a right. Just like food is not a right or housing is not a right. It's a good, and I want to distinguish that. It's a good thing. And I happen to believe that as a culture, we should try to ensure that we all do take care of each other. Mm-hmm. But words matter. And so it sounds good to say it's a right, but you saying it's a right doesn't make it a right. And in fact, that makes us all think wrong.
So I'm going to, I hope not politically incorrectly state this, but you have a culture that I'm going to say are Afro-Americans, black community around this country. And they have gone through horrible things, everything from slavery to a lot of people now have successful businesses. They've been successful in society, but there still seems to be some bigotry, some discrimination. Those are things we need to fix. But why would that community, especially young black professionals, choose a guy like Bernie Sanders and somehow think that they're elevating their so-called rights when in fact all they're going to be doing is giving them up?
Hard for me to say. Why would anybody choose him as far as I can tell, other than believing that what he says, believing somehow his intentions are going to come to pass? Mm. That's a whole nother question as to why the African-American community has been captured, you know, by one party for all this time since the middle of the last century. But certainly the rise of the welfare state, and the rise of the administrative state have not been good for anybody, let alone the African-American community.
It seems to me that if you really look at history, honestly, white, black, Asian, you name it, and you look at our forefathers, our generations preceding us, and you look at the sacrifices they made and the things they came up with and the brilliant ideas, and then you see the mistakes that they made. You know, why do we keep putting ourselves like the Hebrews wandering in the desert for 40 years and never learning anything?
Well, there's a very real reason, which we can say on this station, which is it's not economics. It's cultural. It's familial. The black family was doing much better in the middle of the last century in terms of making gains because it was headed by two-parent households and people went to church.
Right.
Now, with the administrative state and the war on poverty, Lyndon Johnson's initiative and everything since then, we've actually weakened the church. We've weakened the family. And now we're trying to fix with government programs things that are really not the realm of government.
Compare the welfare state and the administrative state.
Yeah, it's sort of the front door and the back door. You know, the welfare state is the government ensuring that people continue to rely upon it for their welfare rather than being self-reliant, self-sufficient, entrepreneurial, and what have you. And the backside of that is the administrative state, which is really what runs the welfare state, which is just the growth, the incredible growth of government. If you're going to launch a new, imagine if we launch what Bernie would call Medicare for All or single-payer health care, the growth in the size of the bureaucracy at the federal government. You know, he talks about how we're going to the money that insurance companies now spend on administration, we're going to save. Oh, no, no. That'll be dwarfed by the growth in the administrative state. So administrative state is the behemoth that it takes to run the welfare state.
We are talking to Steve McKee this afternoon about socialism versus capitalism and really democracy and communism all kind of rolled into one. So stay with us on ABQ Connect. We'll be right back.
God is love. God's love is intrinsic. It is as essential to God as light is to the sun, as blue is to the sky, as wet is to water. You don't make water wet, it is wet. In all of these cases, the attribute is intrinsic to the object. Take great joy in your God. He loves you. Hey, this is Pastor Scott Thom of Cross Christian Fellowship. Connect with us at crossfellowship.org.
Since 1982, Old Mill Farm and Ranch Supply has provided Valencia County with a multitude of services for animals and their owners. Along with organic feed and seed, Old Mill has Western ware, propane tanks, and more. Assorted breeds of baby chicks are arriving in March. We have the supplies you need to raise them right. Family-owned and operated, Old Mill Farm and Ranch Supply's friendly staff are ready to assist. On Highway 314 in Los Chavez and the Riverside location in Rio Communities. You can visit them online at Old Mill Farm and Ranch.
It's the Encounter Tour 2020 with Lisa Turkhurst.
God loves us too much to answer our prayer at any other time than the right time.
And Levi Lusko.
He'll never leave you. He'll never fail you. He's in love with you.
With worship led by Fresh Life Worship. Authentic, unapologetic, engaging. Sunday, April 19th, 6 p.m. at Calvary, Albuquerque. Tickets are on sale now at theencountertour.com. Lisa Turkhurst, Levi Lusko, and Fresh Life Worship. The Encounter Tour 2020.
Now that you've found the girl of your dreams, let us help you find the ring of her dreams. Whether you're worried about your budget, what to look for in a diamond, or even which ring to choose that will make her eyes light up, we've got you covered. We've got the best prices in Albuquerque, the largest selection in the state, and we're the only jeweler that allows you to exchange your ring for one full year, even if we custom designed it. You found your girl, and now you found your jeweler. John Thomas Jewelers, 2440 Louisiana Boulevard, on the third floor of the Lewis University building.
Listen to this hotspot as Skip Heitzig shares a lesson about owning your faith.
So he is mentored by this priest. He becomes king himself, Joash, Jehoash. So now you have a politician with a godly background. He does what is right in the sight of the Lord.
The story doesn't end there.
But his righteousness only lasts while his mentor lasts. When his mentor dies, when the priest dies, he starts taking on the values of the people around him.
Find more from Skip at connectwithskip.com.
If your faith is only propped up by others, you will stumble when those props are gone.
Now this from Skip about deep roots.
You need to come to a place where you build your own roots, man, and you stand before God yourself, man or woman of God, and you are getting the strength directly from the Holy Spirit so that when they die or if they fall or something happens, your faith is not shaken.
On KNKT, this is ABQ Connect with Jim Williams.
One more reminder, the Calvary Albuquerque Marriage Enrichment Workshop is March 21st and 22nd. It's a 20th and 21st. I don't know why I got day off on both of those. So Friday, Saturday, $95 per couple. There's going to be a little assessment that you do online. You then go to the Marriage Enrichment Workshop, and it's a neat time to really open up your marriage and talk with other people about what's going on. If you've got a great marriage, it'll be great for you. If you have things going on that are tough, Steve, when you and Denise were doing this kind of counseling, did you find a lot of reward in meeting with other couples?
Yeah, it made us accountable. We were telling them how to do it and quietly looking at each other saying, well, we're kind of screwing up here.
Well, but I mean, that's a good thing.
It was very healthy for us.
You got to have the
healthy
dialogue. What do you say to couples that are just islands and not talking to anybody and trying to maybe get through it by themselves?
Tough to do. Yeah. We're all basket cases. Yeah. That's what I say to them. So come talk to somebody because we all share the same issues. Yeah. We really do.
Yeah. Well, and I can only say this from my own experience. I had a failed marriage, and part of the reason is we didn't have any, what you just described. You didn't have that accountability. You didn't have that fellowship. And so I want to encourage people, the Marriage Enrichment Workshop, you can go to calvaryabq.org and register for the Marriage Enrichment Workshop. Again, $95. It'll be Friday the 20th from 6:30 to 9:30, Saturday 8:30 a.m. to 3:30 p.m. It's going to be a solid 10 hours, but it'll be great for you. So sign up, again, calvarynm.church or calvaryabq.org. You can get right to it and register for that event. You'll enjoy it and have a good time. Steve, let's talk now about profit. Capitalism, we're all looking to make some profit. Good or bad to make a profit?
Yeah. One of the biggest errors people make, profit is good, period, full stop, end of sentence. Profit is the measure of how well you're meeting other people's needs. That's what it is. If you're meeting their needs and they're willing to part with their hard-earned money for whatever it is you're offering and you make a profit, it just shows that you're meeting people's needs. Furthermore, profit is what fuels your own ability to give, your ability to grow, and importantly, reinvestment in the economy. Profit's what makes the whole thing work. And I don't know why or how we've gotten on this thing that somehow profit is a bad thing. Yes, people can do bad things with their profits. They can also do good things. And the vast majority of profit goes to good use. Yeah. It's a good thing. There's no scenario under which profit is not a good thing other than profit illicitly gained. But that would be true of anything.
Well, and I have to mention here, we have a lot of sponsors here at KNKT. Dave and Holly Slade, Dave Slade and Associates, local realtors, many years sponsors of KNKT. They have a real estate business, and everybody knows Holly Slade has Feed New Mexico Kids. She's spending a portion of her income to feed children that need, and a lot of people have come alongside her.
And not only that, but Dave and Holly do such a great job that the more that they profit, the more people they can serve with their core line of business. What's wrong with that? It's
Amen.
All good.
Yeah. Well, and then a lot of people will hear Buck Buckner, Rain Tunnel Car Spas, on the air, and he's always talking about buying local and encouraging people to not only open up businesses here, but for the consumers, our listeners, to go out and buy local. It's amazing stuff that he asks us to do.
So many of these economic arguments can be really understood when you just personalize them. If you think about everybody in the audience who gets a paycheck, you want to earn more money than your bills cost to pay. At the end of when you pay your bills, you want to have something left over. You could argue that that's your profit. Everybody wants more of that, and there's nothing wrong with it.
Yeah. I loved how you phrased this question. It seems like people think if someone is rich, it's because someone else is poor.
Yeah. That's sort of how we think in these days. But I was reading a book, and somebody said, that's like saying that the reason somebody is sick is because somebody is healthy. The two are not related. There's an understanding or an assumption that to be rich, you have to take from the poor. And that's actually true under a socialist and communist system, because it's all about redistribution. Mm-hmm. In a free enterprise capitalist system, you actually get rich by taking care of the poor, mm-hmm. by meeting their needs better. So no, somebody's not rich because somebody's poor. It's actually just the opposite.
Why are these concepts so difficult for people to consider? Because it seems like they've just said, oh, this system we have is not working.
Yeah, which is ridiculous, of course, and the statistics would show that. But I think it's due to we're fallen human beings, and there are, you know, we have the seven deadly sins, greed and envy. So we're all subject to that. It's easy to look at somebody who's doing better than you and you think unfairly and envy them and try to rationalize those reasons. And when a politician stands on the stage and tells you you're right, it's easy to believe that sort of stuff. So I think we're all subject to those things. I mean, who isn't tempted to envy somebody who's driving a nicer car than you are?
If you are an immigrant to this country, let's say you've come to this country from Mexico, and it's been a rather laborious process to get into the country legally. We're not even going to talk about illegals right now. We know that that's a major problem as well. But let's say that you've immigrated to this country. Truly, why do people come to this country? So that they can all get fair share of what's been the pie divided up? Or is it because they feel like they can have some individual success moving forward?
B.
Yeah.
They're knocking the doors down to get here because we're the land of opportunity and the American dream. And they believe that left to their own devices, they can prosper. That's been the story of America. That's American exceptionalism, a country built on an idea, not a bloodline or a culture. And that's why the world is continuing to beat a path to our door despite our problems, because this people intuitively and inherently know that left to their own devices, they'll be better off than if they expect someone to take care of them.
Freedoms that we're used to today, we're probably taking for granted.
Completely.
We become a socialist country. What's taken away from us?
Well, our freedom of choice is taken away from us in many respects. Some things you won't see. Prices of goods go up. The quality of goods go down. That would happen in a socialist regime. We talked about healthcare earlier. That's a great example. Healthcare will be rationed. Now, today, healthcare is rationed. If you want to put it this way, if you need a liver transplant or a kidney transplant, there's a limited number of those. And there are systems in place to, you know, decide who gets them. If you need a certain kind of operation, if it's an elective operation on your knee, you might have to wait 5 weeks. Whereas if you have a heart attack, they get you in right away. Mm-hmm. So there's systems in place to ration healthcare. And part of that is done through your healthcare premiums. That's one of the things that frustrates us about the whole system is my insurance company denied my claim and those sorts of things. Healthcare is going to be rationed. The demand for it will always be greater than the supply. So really the only question is who rations it? Do you make the decisions for your family that you're either going to give up your car, your second car, or work a second job to pay for your kid's surgery? Or do you want some bureaucrat in some office building, either in Santa Fe or Washington, D.C., drawing a red line through your kid's name or your mother's name because they don't pass a certain criteria? And it's not a scare tactic, but healthcare will be rationed. And the question is, this is really the question for all industries. Who decides? Who do you want deciding what's right for you and your family? You or somebody you've never met?
In the original drafting of the Declaration of Independence, the famous line, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness was different. What was it originally?
It was originally life, liberty, and property. Mm. And it sounds odd to the modern ear, because property sounds somewhat selfish or something.
Yeah.
But the founders understood that without the concept of property, there nothing else of private property, nothing else works. So the pursuit of happiness is sort of an expanded thought on that. But it, what's implied is that property is the foundation of it all. If you don't own the fruits of your own labor, nothing else will work.
So is private property moral or immoral?
It's fundamentally moral. Again, there's no such thing as sharing without owning. There's an expression called the tragedy of the commons. Here's a way to explain it. Do you know why that there are plenty of cows in the world and not enough elephants?
No.
Because we own cows. If somebody owned the elephants in Africa, they would take great pains to protect them from poachers and so forth. Or you could call it, you'll understand this, the tragedy of the teenager. When my kids were teenagers and they drove my car, they trashed it.
Yeah.
There was wrappers left everywhere. The thought of washing it never once occurred to them. My youngest son a few years ago bought his first car. That thing is, he keeps it so well because he owns it and he wants to take care of it. And that's what private property, but when we own something, we take care of it. We take care of our own. We can share it. It's fundamentally moral, private property, not the opposite. In fact, the confiscation of private property is fundamentally immoral because you're taking the fruits of your labor. Somebody is taking the fruits of your labor.
What are the percentages now of who owns what in this country in terms of most of the wealth is owned by 1%?
Depends on how you measure it. That's what they say. That's what the people say. Most of the wealth is widely distributed. Most American families have air conditioning, refrigerators, cell phones, television sets. That's all wealth. There's a difference between income and cash wealth or investment wealth and wealth. And this is the problem. We are by far the richest country. I mean, by far. Everyone in America is in the top 1% of all the people who have ever lived. Just let that sink in for a moment. We all benefit from so much wealth. Think of the restaurants on every corner, the stocked supermarket shelves. All of that is a measure of wealth.
We're going to have one more segment with Steve. This time always flies by. Mr. McKee, thank you for being with us. We'll be right back after these messages.
Gonset Physical Medicine specializes in the diagnosis and treatment of spinal ligament injury. Don't ignore the pain and discomfort any longer. Schedule a consultation today at gonsted-nm.com or 505-884-8584.
If you're currently paying a monthly electric bill, you already have the means to switch to solar. Local and employee-owned and operated New Mexico Solar Group, an authorized SunPower dealer, provides a free consultation explaining the advantages of solar power. Financing available, no down payment. It's easy to harvest power from the sun and stop overpaying for electricity. Call New Mexico Solar Group at 505-357-1198. Online at nmsolargroup.com. That's nmsolargroup.com.
Here's Mike Fabares, Bible teacher on Focal Point.
When Christ's earthly ministry was over, he gathered his disciples together and he commissioned them. And by extension, every generation was commissioned with the same thing. We're to be serious about propagating the gospel. The central verb in that passage, it's straightforward. It's noticeably uncomplicated. It's just simply to make disciples. Now, the three words that surround it remind us of the phases of that. We're to be baptizing them, which means we've got to reach them with the gospel. We've got to then teach them to observe everything that Christ commanded. And then we've got to get out there and do what the disciples did. They went out to make these disciples. So Christ gave us a clear directive, a promise to be with us until the work is done. So let's get out there today and start working to get that job done.
Get more hard-hitting, straight-up Bible teaching when you listen to Focal Point's half-hour program. Consider Pastor Mike Fabares as your personal Bible coach. He'll take you through the paces right here on this station. And listen anytime at focalpointradio.org.
On KNKT, this is ABQ Connect with Jim Williams.
This is an election year for President of the United States. It's also for New Mexicans an opportunity to elect 112 representatives of our state government. Also a lot of judges and other people. Last week, Steve, we had Mike Geyer, who is the chief of police for the Albuquerque Police Department, and his deputy chief of staff, Elizabeth Armijo. And they were talking, Steve, about what they need to be effective. They need more people. They need more people to come in and be police officers, men and women. They're recruiting heavily. They've changed the culture. They still have the Department of Justice kind of still overseeing things. And they're hopeful that that will not last a whole lot longer because they're being evaluated and constantly scrutinized. And in the midst of that, they're being creative about how they're training people and trying to get rid of all the things they were criticized for. But the bottom line is they need people. We need people to vote.
Yes.
At a function that Steve Pierce, chairman of the Republican Party, had a couple weeks ago out at Legacy Church, Steve Smotherman hosted that event. And it was just an amazing time to hear about Christians. Christians, about 50% of us are registered to vote. During any election, only 25% or half, I shouldn't say it that way, 50% of the 50%, so 25% of all evangelicals, for example, are actually voting. And that's just a crazy number. We need people to take action. How do you get people off the couch, Steve?
Yeah, I don't know. We don't vote and then we storm the Capitol because they're going to pass a crazy abortion bill. And I say, well, why don't we just fix it so we don't have to storm the Capitol?
Right.
Why don't we vote? You know, you can vote out of the comfort of your schedule. They make it so easy these days.
And you can register to vote literally in 5 minutes.
It's a piece of cake. And if we elect a different slate of people, you won't have to storm the Capitol.
Right. And this program is really designed not to tell people how to vote, but to tell people where to get the information. Now, we try to look at everything from a Christian worldview. Tell me, Steve, when we start talking about socialism versus capitalism, social justice, how does that all relate to this?
It's a code word. Again, it's branding, and I would be really careful when you hear the term social justice, but let me be fair to it. First of all, it has roots in Marxist philosophy, kind of what we're talking about. We don't want justice. This is my opinion. Those of us who have a Christian worldview, who understand the nature of man, we really don't want justice, because if there's justice, we're toast.
Yeah.
So
we
want
grace.
Yes, we want grace. So I think when people are talking about social justice, what they're really talking about is fairness, that we want fairness, that people should be treated fairly, and that any time that there's unfairness in the society, that's a bad thing, and I would agree with that. However, the question is who's to decide again? Who decides what's fair? You know, Walter Payton, Sweetness. Mm. There was a time I might have looked at him and said, this is unfair. He's an NFL star. He's having all the fun. He's making all the money. He's famous.
Nobody can tackle him.
Right. And then he gets liver cancer and dies at a young age. Mm. So on the one hand, I might have been looking at him and saying, that's unfair to me. And then immediately I think, whoa, wait a minute. That's unfair to him. My point is simply this. It's hard to decide what's fair and unfair. My wife and I sponsor a handful of Compassion Kids. Mm-hmm. And I certainly have it much better than they do. Mm. But in some respects, maybe I don't. You know, maybe when you talk about contentment or you talk about the grace of God. So it's really difficult to determine fairness. And I think if we put ourselves in the position of making that judgment, we are putting ourselves in the position of God. So my response to that is, rather than making judgments as to what's just and what's fair, I should live by the fruit of the Spirit, because that I can do on my own. Mm-hmm. Love and joy and peace. And I can practice charity and giving. And so it's really a mindset issue.
How do we judge one economic system over another? Is one more moral than the other?
Yeah, I think it's the same sort of equation that they are just economic systems, so morality really lies in humans. But one is in keeping with the nature of man, capitalism. One is in contradiction to the nature of man, socialism and communism. And if you trace back the beliefs of the people who espouse both issues, they really go back to one of those two worldviews. And therefore, the one that's in keeping with the nature of man can alleviate a lot of human suffering, because it takes into account our fallibility, whereas the other one actually creates alleviation and suffering because it doesn't.
Mm. Is there always corruption in a socialist type system?
There's always corruption in every system.
There you go.
Right?
Yeah.
We live in a fallen world.
Because there's sin.
Because there's sin. But in a capitalist system, if the means of production are distributed among millions of people, one or two of them are corrupt, it's okay. If the means of production are concentrated in a single hand and it's corrupt, and they're the ones with the guns and the tanks, we're doomed.
Mm. Well, and of course, you get back to what's going on in China right now. I have thought for many, many, many years that the United States needed to do something to bring manufacturing back into our country. those jobs. And it seems like when Russia was in dire straits here 15, 20 years ago, they basically cut off imports and started manufacturing. China did something very similar, and then their exports are just amazing. The United States still has a gross domestic product that's pretty significant worldwide, but it seems like we need to get back more manufacturing.
This is the balance, and this is what nobody has the answer to, because free trade in general is good and it lifts all boats. And yet there are national interests and national security interests. You know, we think in terms of steel and tanks and technology, but the issue of the day are the surgical masks, which, as I understand, are all or almost all made in China.
Yeah.
And they're in very short supply these days. And it's kind of terrifying to think that if China turns on us for whatever reason and quits supplying those masks or just needs all the masks themselves, something as simple and innocuous as that could be a problem.
This seems like an oversimplification, but it's my interpretation of the rise and fall of the Roman Empire. When they outsourced their food, they fell. And I think we're getting very close to them.
Well, we are the world's breadbasket still, which is a good thing. But those are the trade-offs that I don't know that anybody has the answer to. Free trade is good in general, but there are national interests, and there will always be conflicts between countries, and so we have to keep an eye on that.
So, Steve, you don't have a total agreement with any of these people I'm about to reference, but, for example, we have Paul Gessing on the air quite frequently. He is the president of the Rio Grande Foundation, and he has a lot of resources on his website, particularly about state government and who's voting for what. So whether you agree or disagree with the representatives in the state, you can at least see how they vote.
Yeah.
You're also really familiar with Dale Armstrong's organization, Vyante. Rhiannon Samuels, a frequent visitor on our show, and they have a concept where they're very bipartisan, as is the Rio Grande Foundation, but they have identified several areas that they think we can agree on. Quality of life in New Mexico, education, and the reduction of crime. They think that both sides of the aisle can agree on those situations, which seems like a challenge in and of itself. We never seem to really get to where we are all agreeing, but they want to put aside not, like, for example, they know abortion is very, very important, and that's a topic that we need to talk about, but they would like it put toward the end of a legislative session so that we can get the budget approved and talk about, you know, domestic sex trafficking and all these other things that we pretty much should be able to agree on. Getting more police officers, funding police departments, all of those kinds of things. So all I'm doing is bringing up a bunch of websites where you can go get the information. But you've got to start with the New Mexico legislature. Say that five times fast. Mm-hmm. You need to look at their website, find out who your representatives are, and you need to contact them.
They will listen. They will listen. They respond to sincere personal messaging, yes.
What are you hoping happens now, between now and the primaries?
You know, this sounds crazy. I'm actually, in some respects, hoping that Bernie wins, and here's why. He's got the squad, the younger progressives, following him, and I think what they're planning on doing is inheriting his mantle when he does pass away. And if they run for president, whoever they might be, in 12 years, and a lot of the baby boomers have passed on at that time. We have more young people who don't know history. They could actually win. So I think I'd rather have the showdown between socialism and capitalism now. Mm. You have a committed capitalist. There's a lot of things you could say about Donald Trump, but he's a capitalist on the one side. And then you'd have a committed socialist on the other. And I would rather have the showdown now while those of us who still remember history are around than later.
Steve McKee, what a blessing. Thank you for being on ABQ Connect. Joining us, we'll see you tomorrow.
ABQ Connect with Jim Williams is a production of KNKT. The views expressed on ABQ Connect do not necessarily reflect the views of the staff or management of KNKT. If you missed any or part of today's show, get the free podcast at abqconnect.online.